From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters. Life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dr. Richard Weikart, Emeritus Professor of History at California State University Stanislaus and author of Unnatural Death, Medicine's Descent from Healing to Killing. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Richard Weikart in their conversation.
In your book, you talk about a movie called The Black Stork. And in this movie, there's this theme that there are times when saving a life is a greater crime than taking a life. I mean, that's an incredible presupposition.
Yeah, and the movie was put out by a physician named Harry Heiselden, and it was to try to promote his ideas about how it's better sometimes not to intervene. They had very negative views of people with disabilities, and so the idea was, let's try to get rid of them one way or another. Now, some people in the eugenics movement, to be sure, tried to just use controlling reproduction, like sterilization and the kinds of things. But other ones thought they should go ahead and just kill the people outright, kill people with disabilities, and that was morally permissible. The Nazis, of course, were going to take that very in a more fanatical way than most people did. But in the United States, there were people in Britain, there were people promoting the same kind of idea, too, that, you know, we should just kill people with disabilities to try to improve the human race.
Something else I noted in your book, which absolutely shocked me, I didn't know about this, so I was very surprised to read about Helen Keller's support of eugenics and euthanasia.
Yeah, I was very surprised to read that too, because of course she would have been a candidate for it at some stages of her life, according to the norms of some people at the time. But yeah, I was kind of shocked by that as well, that she thought that some people were less valuable than others. And even though she herself was a disability rights advocate in some ways, there were some people that she thought were better off dead.
You talk a lot about Darwinism in the book, and appropriately so. And you mentioned someone earlier, Ernst Haeckel. He, of course, is famous for the evolutionary cliche, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, that the emerging embryo goes through all of the evolutionary stages. So if you abort early on in the process, you're not aborting an infant, you're aborting a creature. So Darwinism had such an incredible impact, not only in the 19th and 20th century, but has and continues to have an incredible impact on this whole subject in the present.
Oh, yeah, it certainly does. And of course, I read you earlier that quotation from Yuval Noah Harari's book, where he uses this essentially evolutionary thinking. Peter Singer uses the same kind of thinking as well. Peter Singer hasn't written an entire book on it like James Rachels has. I mentioned Rachels' book earlier, Created from Animals, The Moral Implications of Darwinism, where he uses Darwinism very forthrightly to justify these things. But Singer has indicated at quite a number of different places that Darwinism does underpin his view that humans do not have any overarching purpose in life or anything beyond ourselves, nothing transcendent. There's no value to human life. In fact, I actually had an opportunity to debate Peter Singer on a radio show, Unbelievable, where the debate was over, is human life intrinsically valuable? Of course, he took the negative view that human life is not intrinsically valuable. And part of that's based on his Darwinian worldview. And by the way, getting on that theme too, there actually are three scholars who have written sort of the best books about the euthanasia movement, the euthanasia and assisted suicide movement in the United States. That's Ian Daubigen. In Britain, that's Nick Kemp. And in Germany, that's Hans-Walter Schmuel. And all three of those make very clear that Darwinism was one of the very important underpinnings, ideological underpinnings of the euthanasia movement in the 19th and on into the 20th century.
It's so interesting when you... maybe macabre, when you think about the idea that we see an animal that's struggling, a horse breaks a leg or whatever, and we put the horse down, we put the dog down, whatever. We don't think twice about that. But if you have a materialist worldview, perhaps you don't have to think twice about putting a human being out of its suffering, out of his or her suffering.
Yeah. Certainly, and Jerry Coyne, in his book, I think it's called Fact Versus Faith, if I recall correctly. It might be Faith Versus Fact, but I think it's Fact Versus Faith. Jerry Coyne, who's a prominent atheist, he was an evolutionary biologist at the University of Chicago. He's now emeritus. But he, in his book, Fact Versus Faith, makes that very argument. He says, look, we put animals down. That's the compassionate thing to do. So why won't we do that for humans? And so my response to that is, well, Jerry, why don't we... round up all the homeless people in Chicago. He's from Chicago. Why don't we just round up all the homeless people there? And why don't we incarcerate them and sterilize them? And then if we can't find a home for them, we can't find anyone to take them into their home, then we will euthanize them. And Jerry Coyne, of course, progressive that he is, would be horrified by any kind of a suggestion like that. He would say, no, of course we're not going to do something like that. But what I just described to you is exactly what we do to dogs. And so the point is, we don't treat dogs the way we treat humans. We don't treat humans the way we treat dogs, and we shouldn't. And he knows that, but they will still use that argument. And he does use that argument in his book to say, well, we put down dogs. That's the compassionate thing to do. So we should do it to humans, too. Well, my argument is, well, humans aren't dogs.
I was going to get into this a little later on in the podcast, but maybe I'll broach this subject right now. And this is asking for your opinion. Look, right now we have a huge debt, a debt that could cripple a country, destroy a country. We're talking about $35 trillion, somewhere in that vicinity. Where do we get to in America where we say, you know what? The homeless people you're just talking about, they're a burden to society. Or elderly people that have diseases that are going to lead to death anyway, they're a burden to society. Where do we get to a point where we say, look, we need to look at our debt. We need to look at the whole, the good of the people that are healthy and wealthy and wise, and get rid of these people, round up these people that you mentioned in your analogy, and get rid of them because they are costing us a lot of money. I mean, there's a societal factor here, but you can also look at families. As I mentioned, I grew up in the Netherlands, where you start to think, you know what? If my uncle Pete or my aunt Gertrude, if she keeps living, whatever inheritance I would get will be gone. Maybe it's better for her to die. I think about this very thing. I mean, all of my siblings are Christian. The very thought of allowing my mother to die early because she had dementia would be anathema to us. But, you know, we looked at the reality that the longer she lived, the more we would have to chip in to take care of her financially. Now, we had no problem doing that whatsoever because we saw the value of her life. But if you're a secular society, I can, what's that agency we have now, DOES, say, you know, look, this is a way that we can cut a lot of money out of our budget.
Oh, yeah. And that works itself out in several different ways. One way is that when Oregon, I mentioned earlier that Oregon, when they allow assisted suicide, they actually do take surveys of why the people have wanted assisted suicide. And one of the responses that is used, I think it's over 90%, if I recall correctly, of responses. And by the way, they can have multiple causes. So it's not like they can choose, they can have three or four or five different causes. It's not like they're choosing one. Over 90% of the respondents, if I recall correctly, said that they do not want to be a burden on their relatives. That's one of the reasons why they're requesting assisted suicide. So sometimes this issue of being a burden on others, the person themselves has internalized that, and they don't want to be a burden on other people. And so they think it's better if I just go ahead and die now rather than, you know, burden my relatives either financially or with time and other kinds of things like that. So that's one way that issue can work itself out. There's another way, interestingly, that can work out though too, and that is by other people suggesting that you should go ahead and kill yourself in with assisted suicide or euthanasia. This has happened. This is not just speculation. This is something that's actually happened on a number of occasions. Let me give you one example that I bring out in my book. A retired corporal in Canada. Canada has had euthanasia since the 20-teens, and has really one of the most advanced euthanasia systems out there in terms of the numbers of people being killed. But in 2022, so just a couple years ago, a lady named Christine Gauthier, who was a corporal in the Canadian military, but she became paraplegic. She actually competed in the Paralympics at one point. But she gave testimony to a parliamentary committee in Canada that she was having problems with the Veterans Affairs Canada because she was trying to get them to install a wheelchair ramp on her home. And they didn't want to do it because it was too much expense, right? So what you're talking about, you know, this issue of money, you know, they didn't want to fork out the finances to give her a wheelchair ramp at her home.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Richard Weikart. In his History of Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, historian Richard Weikart takes us from the ancient Jews, Greeks, and Romans to today, where the urge to help people kill themselves has intensified, even to the point of pushing the reluctant toward death. Weikart explains how we reached this point, revealing a complex history of ideas and attitudes as thinkers grappled with the tension between the unalienable preciousness of human life and the desire to escape suffering and despair. To receive your copy of Unnatural Death, Medicine's Descent from Healing to Killing, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
For decades, Hank Hanegraaff has shared the truth of the historic Christian faith by answering questions over the radio, defending the faith through the written word, and preaching from pulpits around the globe. Today, he is ready to share his life in Christ, as detailed in his most profoundly personal piece of penmanship to date, Truth Matters, Life Matters More. Hank feels closer to Christ than ever before and wants you to learn from his experiences as recounted in Truth Matters, Life Matters More, so that you can join him on life's greatest journey, the journey toward union with God in Christ. To receive your copy of Truth Matters, Life Matters More, The Unexpected Beauty of an Authentic Christian Life, call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do. Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is the comprehensive collection of the most often asked questions Hank Hanegraaff has received throughout his four decades as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With more than 500,000 copies already in print, this newly revised and expanded Collector's Edition helps seekers and skeptics alike sort through the truth on topics such as reliability of the Bible, religions and cults, the resurrection and afterlife, and many more issues vital to a better understanding of God in Christ and our relationship to Him. To receive your copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Expanded, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest historian Richard Weikart as they continue their conversation.
In 2022, a lady named Christine Gauthier, who was a corporal in the Canadian military, she became paraplegic. She gave testimony to a parliamentary committee in Canada that she was having problems with the Veterans Affairs Canada because she was trying to get them to install a wheelchair ramp on her home. And they didn't want to fork out the finances to give her a wheelchair ramp. And so she has to crawl out of her house, you know, to get to into her wheelchair and such and to get anywhere. Well, in 2019, when she was asking for this wheelchair ramp, a Veterans Affairs case manager said this to her: "Madam, if you are really so desperate, we can give you medical assistance in dying now." You know, so here she's being told, you know, "Oh, we can't afford to give you this wheelchair ramp, but if you want medical assistance dying, we can get that for you." You know, so here we have this situation where, okay, you know, we're not wanting to provide for you in a way that, you know, you can live comfortably, but we are willing to kill you and willing to let you die if that's what, you know, if you're willing to write off on that. And that's not the only time this has happened. There's a man in Canada also who had like $100,000 in hospital bills. And the hospital personnel were telling him, you know, "You ought to take medical assistance in dying, you know, because you're running up these huge bills. You're never going to be able to pay this, you know," and all this. And so this has happened on a number of occasions. The other way it works itself out, too, is that insurance companies, of course, benefit when people take assisted suicide. And so they, of course, are very willing to cover the costs of the prescription. They may not be willing to cover the costs of your procedure that you need, you know, to make your life bearable, but they will be willing to cover your assisted suicide dose that you could get. So there's a number of different ways that this works itself out in terms of sometimes pressuring people. You know, usually people aren't going to out and out, you know, say, "Hey, you know, you ought to kill yourself," you know, but although that a few occasions that's happened, but usually that's not going to happen. But still, there's this subtle pressure that I think is more pervasive that people feel like, "Well, I just did better if I do it so that I'm not a burden on people in society." You know, it's interesting with your point, though, that you're making is, you know, when is it going to reach the tipping point where the society is going to be even more pushing for it? You know, I don't know. I hope it doesn't come to that, but, you know, it could. You never know.
Speak to the issue of cognitive dissonance, because on the one hand, there's a very strong sentiment towards equity or equality, not that the two are equal. On the other hand, a lot of people have imbibed Friedrich Nietzsche's idea that we're not created equal. We're not created in the first place, but we're not equal, and have really underscored a radical opposition to equality. I mean, we saw this in Nazi Germany, where you have on the one hand a predilection towards the Übermensch, the Superman, and the other, the disabled, or the person that is not of the right ethnic origin or whatever. And you can get rid of those. And that's all permissible in the struggle for survival, the struggle of the fittest.
Yeah, you're right. It is cognitive dissonance. And there's this interesting interplay going on where people are, you know, if you look at the higher echelons of intellectual life and such, where Nietzsche's ideas are being lauded and honored and such, even though he was teaching this radical inequality and such, where these people are talking about social justice and other kinds of things and all these trying to bring about equality for all sorts of ways. There is sort of a dissonance there. And it comes out in a number of different ways too in this particular issue as well. I mean, in terms of the dissonance, I mean, people with disabilities, we have the Americans with Disabilities Act that was put forward in the 1990s. And there's a lot of push for disability rights and such. And I should say, too, that some of the people that are promoting rights don't even believe in rights, just like I mentioned earlier about Rari not believing in rights. There's also people that are embracing Nietzsche's philosophy, don't believe in rights. People, Foucault, who I don't know how familiar you are with Foucault, but Foucault is a famous French thinker in the late 20th century. He's considered a darling among a lot of intellectuals today in American academe. And Foucault taught that there was no such thing as human rights, even though he would use the language of human rights himself. He would use that language to try to it was basically a rhetorical move to try to convince people and get people on board with his projects that he was wanting, which, by the way, he also promoted assisted suicide. And I talk about him in my book, Death of Humanity. Foucault's ideas, which are again very widespread, and they talk about there's no such thing as human rights, but then they'll use the language of human rights, you know, when it suits their purposes, and they think they can push their rhetorical moves. So there's this cognitive dissonance on all sorts of levels. It comes out with the disability rights as well, which I just mentioned. There's, you know, the push for disability rights, but on the other hand, there's a lot of people in disability rights groups that are now pushing against assisted suicide and euthanasia because they see the way that that's going, and that that's going to push people with disabilities to take that line of attack. We also have the cognitive dissonance in relation to suicide. We have all these anti-suicide programs that are being very often funded by governments and such, and, you know, hotlines and everything else to try to dissuade people from committing suicide, unless, you know, you happen to have this particular condition, and then we'll help you, you know, commit suicide. And so, again, there's cognitive dissonance there, too. You know, what is it about that? Why is it that we're saying that this young person, you know, who this teenager, you know, or 20-something person who wants to commit suicide because they've been jilted by their lover or something like that, you know, or whatever, that they've been bullied by their peers. Why are we trying to offer suicide prevention programs for them? But then these other people, you know, will help them commit suicide, you know, if that's really what they want. So there's dissonance there as well that I think we need to reckon with.
As long as we're naming names, talk about the organizers or the members of the growing euthanasia movement in both the United States and places like Britain.
Well, there's a lot of bioethicists in the United States who are pushing it. I mentioned Peter Singer already as one who is sort of in the higher echelons of the bioethics movement. There's a lot of other bioethicists, though, who are promoting the ideas of euthanasia and assisted suicide. There's also sort of the organizers, though, who are more sort of the grassroots trying to push it in the different places in Oregon in the 1990s and then in the other states and trying to spread it to different places. So there's organizations used to be called the Euthanasia Society of America back in the 1930s and 40s. They've since morphed. They're now Compassion and Choices is one of the organizing figures of them. So they're trying to sort of organize it on a grassroots level and push it, put legislation in different places. They're not always successful. And again, we do have 10 states that have it. But interestingly, this past year, although it was introduced to a number of legislatures, fortunately, none of them adopted it except for one. And in that case, the governor, this was in New Jersey, the governor vetoed the bill. It barely passed. It passed, I think, by one vote, if I recall correctly, in the legislature. The governor, who Democratic governor, vetoed it. So this is actually a bipartisan issue. It's not just necessarily a partisan issue. It does seem that more on the Republican side are opposed to it and more on the Democratic side are supportive of it. But it's not just a Democratic-Republican thing. There's a lot of Democrats who oppose it as well. And not sometimes for ideological reasons, but sometimes also just for practical reasons that they recognize that, you know, once you get rid of human equality, you know, where do you draw the line? That's the big issue. And that's one issue that I raise in one of the last chapters of my book. I have a chapter on the slippery slope and a chapter on autonomy. Those two arguments, the slippery slope argument is usually considered the best argument against assisted suicide and euthanasia. The autonomy argument is usually considered the best argument for euthanasia and assisted suicide. And so I try to dismantle that. But in the slippery slope argument, I talk about the way that once you decide that there is no, that some human lives don't have any value, where do you decide which ones those are? You know, who decides what human lives have value and which ones don't? And interestingly, Peter Singer, who has wrestled with that question, has said that they have that human beings, in order to have value, and by the way, he, along with others, other bioethicists, use the term personhood theory, or call someone a person. They distinguish between a human being and a person, and they say a person has value, but a human being doesn't necessarily have value. They may or may not, depending on whether they're a person. But what defines a person? They say a person is defined by having a certain kind of rational capability to, and Singer talks about them being able to plan the future, for example. But how much of that do you need? You know, that is really, you know, they don't really provide any clear idea as to how much rationality, how much ability to plan the future does it have to be there in order for a human being to be a person? And so there's no real clear dividing line even among them. And I actually pressed Peter Singer on that in the radio debate that I did with him.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with historian Dr. Richard Weikart. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Unnatural Death, Medicine's Descent from Healing to Killing by historian Richard Weikart. Just call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More details Hank Hanegraaff's personal pilgrimage from his long defense of truth to his discovery that life matters more. Essentially two books in one, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. Part 2 explains why truth is necessary, but hardly sufficient. That the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We are created to experience life to the full through union with God in Christ. Is there more to the Christian life than what you are experiencing? Truth Matters, Life Matters More unveils the unexpected beauty of an authentic Christian life. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More for yourself or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us online at equip.org.